Om Jnanatimirandhasyajnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Shukadeva Goswami said, Vibhishana, the pious brother of Ravana and devotee of Lord Ramachandra, received approval from Lord Ramachandra, the king of Kosala. Then he performed the prescribed funeral ceremonies for his family members to save them from the path to hell. Purport. After giving up the body, one is transferred to another body, but sometimes if one is too sinful, he is checked from transmigrating to another body, and thus he becomes a ghost. To save a diseased person from ghostly life, the funeral ceremony or Shraddha ceremony, as prescribed in authorized Shastra, must be performed. Ravana was killed by Lord Ramachandra and was destined for hellish life, but by Lord Ramachandra's advice, Vibhishana, Ravana's brother, performed all the duties prescribed in relation to the dead. Thus, Lord Ramachandra was kind to Ravana even after Ravana's death. In this section of the Bhagavatam, the Leela or pastimes of Lord Ramachandra are summarized. Leela is difficult to understand because it appears to be human-like. And therefore, people who are not acquainted with the science of God, they misunderstand it to be human. There's that verse, Saharamen. Kritavam kila karmani, Saharamena Keshava. Atimartyani Bhagavan. There's one word there. Kapatamanusha, which means referring to Krishna along with Rama, Balaram, he gurha kapatamanusha, that's the word there. Krishna and Balaram appeared in this world. They are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They are beyond the human platform, but they were masked or as disguised, and thus they appear to be like human beings, and ordinary people took them to be human beings. But on the other hand, as the Bhagavatam also states, that etadishanamisha sya prakriti sthopi tadgunaina yujyate sadamasthaya, that even though the Supreme Lord appears in this world as if one of us, he always remains the Supreme Lord. He always remains transcendental to the material condition. So Ramachandra, he appears to be human-like, and even it seems that he himself thinks of himself as human, but he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So to understand this Leela, it's not such an easy point. In one letter, Srila Prabhupada wrote that we are not in, someone had proposed to write a book with just the stories of Bhagavatam, with the philosophy left out. Prabhupada said, we're not interested in the stories of Bhagavatam. We want to understand the philosophy. So, from that point of view, which means Srila Prabhupada's point of view, which means Krishna's point of view, the much praised little Krishna cartoons are not acceptable to properly situated Vaishnavas, where they just have a cheap depiction of Krishna's pastimes, deliberately avoiding giving any philosophical understanding, because then people will take it cheaply. They cannot possibly understand it unless it's explained to them. And to understand it is a topic which may take many lifetimes to understand. Bahunam janmanam ante gyanavan mahaprapatite vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sudurlabhaha. May take many lifetimes. So what does that mean? We shouldn't hear Krishna's pastimes? We should just go on hearing about the tattva, the proper understanding of Krishna? No, we should hear, But we should hear as the Acharya has presented, as Prabhupada has presented it, with proper understanding, intertwined. Don't leave out the philosophy, thinking that we don't like philosophy, or we already understand it all, or we're just already situated on the highest platform, so we're automatically, we can enter into that. This is all what is called Prakrita Sahajya Bhav, or the attitude of cheap devotees who take everything very easily. They're on the mundane platform. So we see here that Ravana, after he was killed, Lord Ramachandra directed Vibhishana, Ravana's brother, to perform the funeral ceremonies. It's called funeral ceremonies, or last rites, for Ravana. In the Vedic culture, the last rites are not simply some rest in peace, they actually have the efficacy to save the soul of the person who has died from a hellish condition, as is mentioned here. So Ravana, he could not be destined for a hellish condition because he was killed by Lord Ramachandra, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And one of the characteristics of the Supreme Person that differentiates him from others is that he awards liberation to those he personally kills. But Ramachandra, taking the role of a human, he directed Vibhishana to perform such rites. Now, this can only be understood by devotees. Non-devotees, they can't understand this, and non-devotees will cite this as evidence that Rama is an ordinary person. These are the intricacies of Leela, how the Supreme Lord, he acts as if he was a human being and acts as if he was obliged to follow the injunctions of the Vedas. He's not obliged, but nevertheless, he follows them to set an example to others. We see that Rama, he took such an effort to find Ravana, to go to Lanka, which Lanka, apart from being protected by millions of powerful Rakshasas, was anyway inaccessible. So that's a good defense, isn't it? Just like Britain, Great Britain, has remained uninvaded since 1066, unconquered. One major reason for that is because it's an island. It has a natural defense. Whereas Ireland, which is right next to, because it's a small island next to the bigger island called Great Britain, has been largely subordinate to Britain all this time. So that Lanka was isolated. It was, how many, 1,000 yojanas? No, 100 yojanas. I can't remember. Anyway, it's a much longer distance than the present Sri Lanka that we see off the coast of India. According to Ramayana, it was quite isolated. So that was a good moat, good first line of defense, that no one could go there anyway. And even if you went there, then the city was walled, and even if somehow or other you could attack the city, it was protected by so many powerful Rakshasas. So Ravana's position seemed invincible, but Ramachandra anyway went there with much effort and with much ire against Ravana. He eventually killed him. And then after that, he, having killed him, he directed Vibhishana to perform the ceremony by which Ravana could be saved from hellish life. to see the quality that out of, to protect Dharma, Rama, he went to so much effort to kill Ravana, and he was definitely angry at him. He wasn't angry with him. And Ravana deserved to be killed, and he deserved hellish life. But Rama, showing the great quality of mercy, one quality is mercy, and another is not holding a grudge that, let him go to hell, he deserves it. But no, if the Vedic rites can be performed to help him, then why not? So this is mercy. Sometimes, recently within our society, causeless mercy, the principle of causeless mercy has come under question from some of the more intelligent members of our society who think it's chic to question everything that Prabhupada says. And they question that, well, it's not causeless mercy because if you do something in your previous life connected with Krishna, then you get this sukriti, and then it's only such persons who they take to Krishna consciousness. But actually, the term causeless is just to underline the principle of mercy, because if there's any cause, then it's not mercy, is it? If there's any reason for someone to be kind to someone else, if there's any calculation that what will I get out of it, or anyway, this is my son, so I should be kind to my son. If there's any calculation, there's not mercy anyway. Mercy means causeless. Mercy means that when one has got nothing to gain from another person, one is superior to that person, but nevertheless acts for the benefit of that person simply out of the kindness of one's heart, that is called mercy. So mercy by its very nature is causeless. But the adjective causeless is adjoined to the noun mercy to underline the point. Because in this world sometimes what may appear to be mercy or kindness is often motivated. A mother's love to the child, Srila Prabhupada said, is the closest to pure love in the spiritual world. But many times I've seen in India that the parents, they're interested, that they put so much endeavor into raising the children, but they're very interested that the children will get a so-called good job, earn plenty of money, and look after me in old age. And that becomes apparent, for instance, if their son wants to join the temple. And they become very upset. It's not just that they're concerned about the future of the son, and they say all that you know, your future, but they're very concerned about their own future. And they're also very concerned about what others will say about them. You see, you didn't bring up your child properly. You must have mistreated him, and that's why he wants to become a sadhu. They're very concerned what others will say about them. And we see in the modern Western world where parents don't expect their children to look after them in old age, that they also don't put the same amount of love and affection into them as in more traditional societies in which the families are very tightly woven and everyone is interdependent, which suggests that the thesis of the Bhagavatam or of the Vedanta, that so-called family love, it's simply a hoax. It's not pure love as it might be suspected to be. But pure love means without any expectation of any, completely pure means without any expectation of anything in return. So real mother's love is or parents' love is when they want their children to be pure devotees of Krishna. They bring them up with that aim in mind. In this regard, there's one purport that Srila Prabhupada has written in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Shachi Mata, she wanted Nimai, who had just taken sannyas. He wasn't Nimai anymore. He was Krishna Chaitanya, his sannyas name. So Shachi Devi said, it would be a great pleasure for me if anyway after his taking sannyas, Nimai would stay with me, but it would be a great distress for me that everyone would criticize him for doing so. So she gave him permission to leave. Of course, when one takes sannyas, traditionally one doesn't take permission. You have to take permission, no one will ever take permission. It's not really sannyas if you take permission. But, of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he is not exactly a sannyasi in the ordinary sense. He is the complete sannyasi in as much as he owns everything, but he's renounced from it anyway. But he has nothing to renounce because he has no material attachment to this world. So, in one sense, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is anyway the greatest sannyasi. And on the other hand, there's no need for him to take sannyas because he has no attachment to anything of this material world. So, that point of mercy, that the real affection in this world is to help others or to desire that others come to Krishna consciousness. And in that purport concerning Shachi Mata and Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhupada says that a real mother must allow her son to go out to search for Krishna. If she keeps him at home for her own sense gratification, then ma or mother becomes maya, simply a representative of the illusory energy by which one is bound up by motherly affection, or by which the mother is attached to the child on the mundane platform. So mercy is causeless. That is the point there. Ramachandra, even though Ravana had acted so abominably, and even if Ravana had not kidnapped Sita, even if he hadn't done that, he was still the hottest bet for going to hell in quite a few yugas, since the time of Hiranyakashipu, who he happened to be the same person. He really deserved it. But Rama, out of his mercy to Ravana, arranged for the ceremony by which Ravana was delivered from hell. Now, also, those were killed by Vishnu, they achieved liberation, but by having that ceremony performed and freeing Ravana from his deserved hellish punishment, that could be the transcendental device also by which Rama didn't give Ravana liberation, because he had to take birth again. So to fulfill the curse of the four sages, the Chatusan, Sanat, Sanak, Sananda, and Sanatan Rishis. So all these points, they can be quite complex to understand how Leela unfolds. All these different subtle points. So non-devotees, they can't understand this. How the Supreme Lord acts as if he's a human being, but he's always in the transcendental position. He's not attached to this material world. But by coming to this world, he attracts us to him, and he also gives various lessons. I remember the first time when I read in this ninth canto, one of Prabhupada's comments about the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra, I was quite shocked. Because Prabhupada said that Lord Ramachandra, by his pastimes, what's exactly the word he said? One shouldn't... the suffering of being attached to a woman. So that's also a lesson. That in material world, everything everyone does is for enjoyment, but it all ends of suffering. And the prime activity that in human life for enjoying this world is that a woman joins with a man and a man joins with a woman for the sake of assisting each other to enjoy the material world. But it's all suffering, because the very nature of this material world is suffering. And the more one thinks one is going to enjoy, the more one's motive is to enjoy, the more that one suffers. So in Krishna conscious family life, if it's actually Krishna conscious, the motive has to be to serve Krishna, because if the motive is to enjoy each other or to enjoy the world together, then it must result in suffering, because these are the laws of nature. It's unavoidable. Just as in Ireland there must be rain, it's a law of the material world concerning this particular Emerald Isle, which if one tries to enjoy this world, he must suffer. Therefore, don't try to enjoy. That's a good lesson. That Ramachandra himself gives it by acting as a human being. And even though he's acting as the ideal human being, that he's completely sinless. Of course, people sometimes criticize him for various acts, such as killing Vali, the monkey, when Ram was standing behind a tree and Vali was unarmed and unknowing that even Ram was there, and Rama shot him dead. So sometimes people criticize Rama for that, and even more so for abandoning Sita when she was pregnant. So people do find fault with him, but persons who are knowledgeable of the precepts of Dharma, they don't find fault. They understand that this is the proper thing for Ram to do. So even if one is the most dharmic person, even if one follows all the principles of Dharma in the best possible way, as Rama did, and actually no one can follow as well as Rama did. Rama, Yudhishthira, these are all Dharmaveers. They're heroes of Dharma. So it's very difficult for anyone of less capacity, less moral capacity, to follow such an ideal. That Yudhishthira, for instance, after he had left home and his wife and brothers followed him, and then he was offered, now you can go to heaven. This is in the Mahabharata, the commonly extant edition. And it happened that a dog had been following Yudhishthira and said, "Well, I'm not going without this dog. If the dog doesn't go, I don't go." So in the modern Western world, that would seem quite a normal thing. But in Indian culture, a dog is considered the just horrible creature that is just a very low class creature. One who keeps dogs in their, only chandals keep dogs in their homes. So that was a great act of Yudhishthira, because even though the dog is a rejected creature, still, because the dog had been following him, then Yudhishthira refused to go to heaven. Then when he did go to heaven, he saw Duryodhana, Dushasana, all there, and he didn't see his brothers. He said, well, what's going on? You want to see your brothers? Okay. And then he went, then he was given a vision. He went to hell and saw his brothers and Kunti are in hell, and he couldn't work it out. What's going on? I spent my whole life dedicated to Dharma, and here we see the people who are against Dharma, they went to heaven, and the people who are following Dharma went to hell. And then Yudhishthira said, well, if my family members are here, I'm staying in hell too. I'm not going to go to heaven. So that was his final test. It was an illusory vision of hell. But such a character, he's so dedicated to Dharma, that he was prepared to accept any amount of suffering in order to follow Dharma. So we can imagine what a big test it was for him when he was asked to lie in the presence of all the Kshatriyas as a ruse to effect the death of Drona. What a big test for him that was. So to follow Dharma to the level of Rama or Yudhishthira is not possible for an ordinary person. Still, one should try to do so to the best of one's capacity. But the point is here, that even if one follows Dharma to the best of one's capacity, still there is suffering in this material world. It won't, that the very nature of this world, one cannot escape that. Just like, you know, you may make all arrangements for comfortable living in Ireland, but still it's rainy and cold. You can't escape it. It's just the nature of the place most of the time. So you can, like you say, oh, look at that, there's sunshine, take a photo quick. Within 5 minutes it'll probably be raining again. I'm not saying that as I'm not claiming to be a great seer of the future. It's just that, you know, that's the way it is around here, isn't it? Surya is trying to prove me wrong. Well, if he is, I bow at his lotus feet. He's maybe having a fight with Vayu and Indra, the controllers of the wind and the rain. So, you can make all arrangements, but still the very nature of the material world is miserable. There's so many people made so many arrangements for happiness, like the lord and lady of this home, but still within this, undoubtedly within this household, which was built for the happiness of the first lord and lady, there's, just like there are office politics in the modern world, so in lordly households, there's kitchen politics. There's the Hare Krishna. Keep it off. There's kitchen politics. There'll be the lords and the ladies, and then there'll be the butler and the kitchen staff, the cooks, and the liverymen and the, what's that called? Farrower, is it? The one who put the shoes on the road. Those who look after the horses, what are they called? See, we don't even know the word.
Stable boys.
Stable boy, there's a more technical term than that. Stable boy is something, but the one who actually looks, who takes charge. Farrower, is it?
Farrier,
yeah. See, we all forgot these words because they don't have any usage nowadays. So, and among them, there's all this politics, and someone's trying to pull someone down and take advantage of someone else, and like this. So, it's always there, and there'll be running rings around the lord and lady and taking advantage of them. When the lord and lady go off to Belfast or whatever, in their horse and buggy or whatever they go in, then polluting the path along the way, by the way, with horse stool, right? It's also pollution. When they first brought in motor cars, they thought this will save all the pollution. Because we won't have any horse stall all over the place anymore. So then in the meantime, while they're away, the staff, they all enjoy the facilities and everything. So that's always there. There's always. And then at the lord and lady level, there's always some politics. And one lord wants to show he's better than another lord. And sometimes that's Irish history, isn't it? That one lord attacks another lord. They have some argument. And then one of them kills another. And then they make different alliances and like this. So anyway, the bottom line, to use that highly worn out expression, is this material world is simply miserable. To put it another way, there's no happiness here whatsoever. And one should follow the path of Lord Ramachandra, follow his ideal example of living as ideal a manner as is possible in this world, with the purpose of getting out of it and going to the spiritual world. But if we mistake Lord Ramachandra to be an ordinary person, then we're in trouble. So therefore we should hear the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra and Krishna and all the different avatars from the acharyas to understand their actual import and not be misled. Because there are so many wrong ideas, just like it's a common wrong idea, misconception, that because Rama killed Vali by shooting Vali from behind a tree, killed him with his arrow, therefore, in his next birth, Krishna was killed by a hunter's arrow. See what a nasty idea. There's so many nasty ideas that are propagated. But we have to hear from the acharyas that Krishna is completely transcendental. He's not under the laws of nature whatsoever. Okay, Hare Krishna. I'll finish there unless there are any questions.
When Krishna is killing the demons.
Yeah, when Krishna kills the demons.
They're going to Brahmajyoti.
They go to the Brahmajyoti. Or they may, especially Krishna, the original form of Godhead, then those who are killed by Krishna, they may attain their original form in the spiritual world also.
Yeah, but some of them, they are going to Brahmajyoti.
Some are going to the Brahmajyoti, yeah. But those who are killed by Krishna, they attain their original spiritual form.
And it is in all cases that they will always go to.
In all cases, they'll always go to.
To constitutional position.
To their constitutional position when they're killed by Krishna. Generally, Krishna can make exceptions also. Generally, that's the case. Putana got the role of a wet nurse, just like a mother. Dhatri, that's stated, she got the role of Dhatri, which means wet nurse, which means one who's not the physical mother, but nevertheless suckles the child with her own breast milk. So that position was given to Putana. I mean, you couldn't be more nasty than Putana if you tried, right? Who could be more nasty? Posing as a very nice woman with the purpose of killing babies and sucking their blood. I mean, even today in the modern world, where you know, so many horrible things are going on, but still people don't like killing babies. That hasn't become accepted as acceptable. All kinds of horrible things are accepted, like torturing and slaughtering millions of animals. Abortion. That is killing babies. But at least when the baby's out of the womb, it's considered a heinous crime to kill the baby, which is actually hypocrisy, because killing them within the womb or killing them outside the womb, it's just a matter of location. But somehow or other they think it's quite acceptable to kill within the womb and quite unacceptable to kill outside the womb. So anyway, Putana was a extremely sinful, nasty. But Krishna gave her the position of his mother. Yeah, anything else? Yeah.
In the study books that Srimad Bhagavatam Bhagavad Gita,
yeah,
the understanding comes because of our efforts and intelligence.
When we study Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, does the understanding come about through our effort or and our intelligence? Okay. Well,
Or they reveal themselves.
Well, that which comes about through our, the understanding that comes about through our effort and our intelligence is called a misunderstanding. It's a kind of understanding, but it's a misunderstanding. And the proper understanding comes by the mercy of the Supreme Lord, by Krishna's mercy, being pleased upon the devotee for attempting to serve him by studying this literature. Which means that one has to apply one's intelligence and effort. But if one thinks that now by my own tremendous cerebral potency, I will understand the scripture, then from the very beginning it's a misunderstanding of the process and of our position. So one cannot understand anything. But if one humbly applies his God-given intelligence to understand this subject matter, then Krishna, being very kind, will reveal himself to the devotee. The process of understanding the Bhagavatam is described in a purport of the last verse of the third chapter of the first canto of Bhagavatam. That one should hear attentively from a qualified speaker. But no one can hear attentively who is not pure in mind, and one who is not, well, no one can be pure in mind unless they are pure in action. And pure in action means pure in eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. So that's an interesting purport, which also suggests so many people ask that, well, we can't chant attentively. There's the answer. Comes down to we have to follow the regulated principles. So, no one should think that by my effort I'm becoming advanced. If we think like that, if we think that we're becoming advanced, we're not becoming advanced. And if we think that it's by my own effort, we're definitely going in the wrong direction. We should strive with all our endeavor and at the same time think that I'm completely helpless and completely dependent upon Krishna's mercy, which is a fact, because we don't have any individual strength anyway. Maya can just knock us all away in a second. It's only by the mercy of Guru and Krishna that we're able to remain in Krishna consciousness. Desire, everything depends on desire. We can desire to serve Krishna or desire to forget Krishna. So it's up to us in that sense. There's this question, suggests the Sanatana Goswami's explanation of the two fingers of when in the Damodar Lila, the rope was always two fingers short. So Sanatana Goswami explains that two fingers short means, that means by the width short, means that there's one's own, the two factors, there's one's own endeavor and the mercy of the Supreme Lord. So these two factors both have to be there. Yeah, anything else?
There's one thing that I noticed in the last few hours, sometimes devotees, they would separate Prabhupada's purports into absolute philosophy and relative social commentary. I just wanted to say something.
Yeah, okay, I'm just going to repeat that. Yeah. sometimes devotee, or a recent tendency you're saying is to, is to separate what they consider to be Srila Prabhupada's absolute statements and that which it, which they consider to be relative,
social,
which is relative in the sense of not being absolute.
Yeah, one thing that you said.
Relative social commentary, yeah. Because it could be understood that when you say relative, it could mean related to the, yeah, anyway.
Not absolutely. One thing that really struck a chord with me that you said was that Prabhupada's point of view is Krishna's point of view.
Yeah, Prabhupada's point of view is Krishna's point of view. He's no, it doesn't have any separate point of view, yeah.
I suppose they're justifying it by citing certain interactions in the past that Prabhupada had with his disciples where it appeared that he wasn't,
Yeah, this is a very important topic that, that devotees say, well, Prabhupada in the past, he acted in a very human way, and in interactions with his disciples, he would sometimes admit some mistake. And it's actually, I'm here on my way to a meeting to discuss this, a GPC subcommittee to discuss all these issues. How are we to understand Srila Prabhupada? Well, from Shastra, it's very clear that Gurushu Naramati, one who thinks that the Guru is an ordinary person, he's Naraki, he's a resident of hell. The Prabhupada quoted that many times. And then we have the Krishna himself quotes, Krishna himself states, it's a much quoted verse, that Acharyang mang vijani an navamanyeta karhichitna martya buddhya suyeta sarva deva mayam guru. Krishna says one should never think, one should consider the Acharya to be me, and should never envy him in any way. One should not consider him to be an ordinary human being because he is the representative of, he is the representative of all the demigods. Krishna, when he states this, he's talking about, the guru, he's describing the brahmacharis and how they live in the gurukul. And most brahmacharis who live in the gurukul would be, a rishi in the forest living with his wife with a few boys as their students, not a big world acharya like Ramanuja or Prabhupada. But that guru should also be considered God, on the same platform as God. So these are the Shastric statements. And if human-like behavior or apparent mistakes, they're always described by the acharyas. It's like Arjuna appeared to be bewildered, but it's understood because he's a pure devotee that he is deliberately put into that ignorance for his particular purpose of Krishna. Similarly, Parikshit Maharaj, he offended the Shamika Rishi, but he would normally have never done that, but that was actuated by Krishna's Lila Shakti, or Yoga Maya potency, so that the Bhagavatam could be spoken. So this is the way to understand it. But, we could, we could say, well, Prabhupada said so many things which are not acceptable. His statements about, women and the moon and, but really, if you, once you start doing that, then there's no end to it. Because, I mean, almost everything Prabhupada said went against the grain of materialistic thought, which is exactly what a guru does. He takes you out of the materialistic way of thinking. In Srila Prabhupada's introduction to Bhagavad Gita, he states just near the beginning in a matter-of-fact way that Krishna spoke this so many millions of years ago to the sun god, and the average reader, first of all, they don't believe that anyone even lived millions of years ago. Sun god sounds like something from some primitive stone age culture, according to what people are raised to believe, that there were some blobs of jelly floating around in a primordial soup that somehow or other turned into fish and then lizards, and then they came on land and became lizards, and then they became monkeys, and then they stood up, and then they became Charles Darwin, and or they became British, you know, not Irish for sure. I mean, the Irish are, you know, they're a evolutionary aberration. It just happened to be stuck off the shore of England. But you know, the ultimate pinnacle of evolution is not British, yeah, well, that's broad term, more likely English, and then south of England, not north of England. So this, so if we say that there was highly advanced spiritual knowledge being spoken millions of years ago by Indians, they're not likely to accept that. What to speak of sun gods and millions of years ago. But Prabhupada, you accept or don't accept. You can't start picking and choosing. Prabhupada does the picking and choosing for us. He tells us, in Shastra this is stated, this is what is meant. Bhagavad Gita as it is. It's very simple, straightforward, clear to understand. But in one case, Krishna says one thing and Prabhupada says something else. We accept what Prabhupada says, not what Krishna says, because Krishna says this knowledge, one should not disturb the minds of the ignorant. And Prabhupada says, well, we should disturb them because the devotee knows the purpose of the Lord. Which, that the Lord says that, but actually the purpose of the Lord is to save them. So, yeah, we have to accept Prabhupada's authority. At the same time, we have to go through carefully because, not everything Prabhupada said is to be taken literally. And not everything that's in Shastra is applicable in the modern age. Just like in that description of the brahmacharis I was saying in the seventh canto, which describes how a brahmachari dresses with a belt of munja grass and he carries a stick, and we don't do that nowadays. So, in one purport in the fourth canto, Prabhupada writes that Sati was lucky that Lord Shiva didn't sell her jewels to buy ganja. And that's obviously a joke, but some readers in India take that seriously and become offended. So it does require explanation also, which is why parampara means that in every generation, the previous generations of acharyas are explained for the benefit of the present generation, and from time to time, there come great acharyas who sort out a lot of the misconceptions and make everything clear. So, that's required in every generation. There have to be gurus who explain all these points. And some are explaining them in the way to say that, well, Prabhupada, we can accept some things and not other things. But I'm confident that the actual sampradaya will go on in full strength with those who explain Prabhupada to be not subject to human deficiencies, but a completely pure devotee of Krishna, that everything he said is perfect, and the strength of the sampradaya will come down. And those who doubt it, even though it may seem that Srila, to ordinary vision, that Prabhupada did make mistakes, but those who subscribe to such a theory, they will not progress in spiritual life. They will lose faith in even those statements which they with their great intelligence can understand to be actually spiritual compared to the other ones which are not spiritual. And such persons will, and first of all they want to have faith, and then by the offense of not having proper faith in the acharya, they will fall down. It's already a fall down. However, pious it might sound, that yes, we have faith in Prabhupada, but blah, 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 but, yeah. But we'll see in the long run what happens to such people. Yeah, what Prabhupada says means what Krishna says. And if it appears like a mistake to us, well, we should understand that that's ordained by Krishna, because it's not that Prabhupada floated between two states of consciousness, material and spiritual, or that or that sometimes he was subject to brahm pramad vipralipsa karna partav, this that mistakes, subject to making mistakes, subject to being an illusion, subject to the cheating propensity and having imperfect senses. No, he's always situated in the spiritual position. That verse I quoted at near the beginning of the class, etadishanam ishasya prakriti stopi tadgunaina yujyate sadatmana. And then the last line I didn't quote because it wasn't relevant to what I was saying, but now it is. Yatabhutistadashraya, which means that Krishna, he comes in this world and he behaves like an ordinary human being. But he's not. He's always situated above material nature. And then the last line of the verse, which, as I say, I didn't quote because it wasn't relevant to what I was saying at the time. But the last line is that those who are his pure devotees, they're also in the same position. So this is how it's to be understood. And it might seem that through normal intelligence that this is not correct, but that normal intelligence will keep us in this material world. There's the transcendental intelligence means to believe, not blindly, not blind following, not fanatical following, but at the same time we have to accept that certain persons are empowered in mysteries of the Supreme Lord, and Vaishnava Kriya Mudra Bigeha Nabhujai, this pure devotees, they cannot be understood by mundane scholarship, even great academic scholars. They can't be understood by any mundane method. And it's offensive to even attempt to do so. So and that I said, what Prabhupada said is what Krishna says. I mean, it should be accepted just straightforwardly within our movement. And if it's not, then there's something seriously wrong. I mean, our whole movement is based on this premise, isn't it? That we have faith in what Prabhupada said. He's the representative of Krishna. If we don't believe that, then what have we got left? What are we? What strength do we have? We're going to go and get college degrees and reform the whole sampradaya, tell Krishna, correct Krishna when he got it wrong, and correct Prabhupada where he got it wrong, and get a PhD and go to hell. And as Prabhupada said, we want to take a PhD from Ramananda Rai. It's there in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Prabhupada said, in the discussion of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's conversation with Ramananda Rai, Prabhupada said that academic scholars, they can't understand this. To understand this, one has to take a PhD from Ramananda Rai. We have a different methodology. Their methodology is based on, what is that? The scientific method. This empiricism, skepticism, ethical neutrality. These are various components of the scientific method. And our method is to hear with faith from the acharyas, using our own effort to try to understand also. But with faith, as Arjuna said to Krishna, sarvam etad ritang manye yang mang vadasi keshava. O Krishna, I accept as truth everything that you say. So that's the basic premise. Then we may have to see some of Prabhupada's statements, like that one about Lord Shiva. Srila Prabhupada's statements about the size of women's brains and men's brains is an example, it's a commonly cited example of statements of Srila Prabhupada that have come under question. So there may be some grounds for qualifying to some degree. Not really qualifying, but understanding how to understand Prabhupada. But the basic principle is to have full faith in him as an empowered acharya. And what he said is dictated by Krishna. And if we deviate from that principle, then we're finished. Who are we anyway? What strength or what spiritual standing do any of us have? What austerities have we performed? What devotion? We can hardly, we can hardly even chant 16 rounds. And we want to think of ourselves as fit to judge with our puny intelligence, the acharya of the. So, we shouldn't do that. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada.